Well, we're going to start because we do have Vespers that's going to want to make sure we make good use of our time. And welcome. It's wonderful to see you all. Thanks for coming. You must be serious worship people. You must care about the details of worship and think about that and love that if you're here. My name is Mary Halverson, and I'm a pastor at Grace University Lutheran Church on the heart of the U of M campus, University of Minnesota campus. And I've been there, I'm starting my 19th year, which is hard to believe. It's my second call as an ordained pastor. So I can't blame the pastor before me because I'm it. And I'm happy to have Siri, my daughter, who's on staff here, who's going to help us in some of our singing. Well, I'm going to say just a couple things about worship, some of my things that matter to me as I think about worship. And I just love planning worship and working with lay folks. And I also do a lot of, I plan our assembly, worship assembly, worship services. I've planned a lot of conference assembly worship, so it's great to work with other people. And when you get folks together with their synergies and ideas, it's amazing what can happen. Tonight we're going to focus on Advent and Christmas. We're going to take a season every day, and it fits in nicely. There are five major seasons, and we have 5 days in Advent and Christmas, and we'll see how far we go. Just want to say a little bit about worship. I heard a woman talk about liturgy, and many of you know liturgy is the work of the people. She also added that liturgy is the play of the people, which I really loved, this notion of playfulness. And this idea that worship is a drama in which we are all a part, we are all actors in that drama, all active participants in carrying out and living out this story. And of course, God is the subject, Christ is at the center, but we are active participants in this drama, in this liturgy. Worship certainly shapes and forms us into the body of Christ. And you talk about community, and that really is interesting to me. After being a pastor all these years, the power of gathering as a motley crew of people that we didn't plan on calling together, right? I mean, I don't shape the congregation I serve. It is a total gift that these people have come together for some unknown reason. And at Grace, 35 to 40% of people who worship are visitors every Sunday. Because we have a hospital next door, we have student dorms, and so we get to really be the church every Sunday. We better show up and be people of hospitality and welcome because they're right there. And the reason we have weekly communion, besides Luther saying we really should do that, is because someone may be there one Sunday and they've been at the hospital with their child who just had a bone marrow transplant and they need the full meal deal. And it was very easy to convince people to move from that, you know, oh, it won't be special. And we said, you know, this is about being the church for someone who comes one time and they are at a desperate place and we need to offer the full meal deal instead of a light meal. But the worship shapes us and forms us and teaches and molds us into being people of the kingdom of God. In worship, we get to try out what it means to live in the kingdom of God, right? We get to act as if we're people of peace when we extend the peace, which is really a powerful thing that we do. I mean, we need to remind people that when we extend the peace, this is radical, you know? I extend the peace to you, which erases all discord and all discontent I might have with you. We get to be in unity. We get to be beggars together at the table. We come forward with our hands open saying, I'm a sinner, I'm in need. I mean, that's really radical stuff. We get to act as if. We get to try this on and wear being people of God's kingdom. Feasting together. The other thing about worship is time, which I think is so interesting. We have a half moon altar. Do any of you have a half moon altar? And to imagine that the cloud of witnesses, the saints that gather, are creating that other half circle. So someone who's lost their spouse or on All Saints Sunday, we talk about that circle is unbroken by the saints that gather. We talk about the prayer-soaked walls of all these centuries where people have come to pray, the power of this place that, that gathers us, the Christ that calls us together. But the sense of time, we worship the Christ who was, right? Jesus on the night in which he was, we remember that night, and then we worship the Christ, the God in Christ who is, I am in the bread and wine, do this right now, remember to me, I'm here. And then we anticipate the feast that is to come, and we do that all in one fell swoop. I mean, we do that all in one sitting. We embrace past, present, and future, and in a way we transcend it, or we're fully in it. So I think this idea of time is really powerful. We need to remind our people of that almost collapse of time and what a richness is there. In our church at Grace, we have a high altar and we have a freestanding altar. Maybe some of you have that. Maybe you struggle with where your altar is or you've changed things around. And I love that because for us it reflects that God present and revealed and the God hidden and mysterious and other. And there's that tension we hold, right? The God hidden and the God revealed. And every Sunday we claim that tension. And I'm going to talk a lot about tension, creative tension, which is what makes our worship lively and alive and pulsing with life. So tension is good. In my book, tension, right? As biology, a biologist, tension, we need tension for things to crash together and for something new to be born. And of course, as you all know, in worship we bring our whole selves. I'm so distraught as a pastor when people feel like, we had a member whose husband took his life. He was a pastor. She was full of shame, full of shame. And she could have stayed away, which people do, but she kept showing up. She brought her tears, she brought herself fully, and she got braver and braver. And I'm sad when people feel like they can't come to church in those precise times. And I think the church should be a safe place, right? And so we need to be aware of when we don't allow it to be a safe place. It needs to be the safe place where you can precisely go when you've been divorced and your husband or wife has left you or whatever. But we bring our whole selves, we bring all of our senses, we bring our whole body. And we Lutherans have to work on that because we're pretty head up, right? But we talk about this incarnational God, this God who's been embodied in the world and incarnated in the world. We kind of cut off a lot of that experience. And that's a challenge for us. That's a tension. But how do we embody our faith and that theological truth in our worship? And Luther said, as you know, you've studied this, What is right, proper worship? What does he say about that? What do we need for worship? What's necessary?
Words.
Yeah. And what he said is, what is necessary and non-negotiable is good preaching, honest and truthful preaching, and proper use of the sacraments, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't want chaos. We don't want everybody and their aunt and uncle to preside, because we need some order and chaos. But that's simply it. So the other stuff, like should we stand or should we sit or should we use this creed or that creed or should we sing the Kyrie, that's all adiaphora, right? I mean, really. And when we get ourselves bunched up over some of those things, you know, we got to go back to Luther. It's really, we're very free in our worship. Okay, right? Preaching and proper use of the scripture. Of the sacraments, and the rest, there's a lot of freedom. And the pattern of worship, and we'll get into Advent, is simply we gather, we listen, we respond, and we're sent. That's the classic pattern of worship. That's the classic pattern of the Mass. And we worship so that we can be sent. We don't worship so that we can stay, right? We worship so that we can get our butts kicked out of there, you know. The worship ends and the service begins. No, that's the saying. And then the church year, which is such, many of you have seen this maybe, Imaging the Word. Have you seen this? It's this wonderful lectionary with arts and poetry, a text of all three years, A, B, and C. And we have this wonderful gift in worship of the church here, which helps, gives us an arc to our story, gives us a pattern, gives us a destination, a storyline. And then we get to do it A and year B and year C, and then we get to do it all over again. And so what a wonderful thing, because we're fickle people, we need repetition, we need to be reminded, we need these helps to connect us and ground us to the larger story and to find our place in that story. So we're going to talk about the church year, and we're going to start with Advent, and that's just a few introductory comments about worship. But I want us to start, we've got to sort of get ourselves into the mind of Advent. And for some of you, this is the weather in Advent. For some of us, it's not. It's dark and cold and all that kind of stuff. But I just want to throw out there, what do you think of when you think of Advent? What comes to mind? Words, symbols, images? Advent.
Struggle.
Struggle.
Okay,
waiting. Prepare.
Darkness.
Darkness.
And light, in contrast to the darkness.
And light, yep.
Birth,
yes.
And the blue, the color blue.
Yep.
Blue comes up.
Women.
Women. Yep.
I think of, like, because I make sure it's in there, I stray away from the lectionary a little bit, and I always want to make sure there's the message of be not afraid.
Yep.
I always make sure that message of the angels.
Minor key.
Minor key. What's the feel of Advent? Or what, maybe if you think about it as a child, the feelings come up when you think of Advent?
Mysterious.
Mysterious.
Expectancy.
Yeah.
Excitement even.
Anticipation.
Yeah.
Excitement.
Well, I think biblically I think of like anxiety.
Yeah.
And actually, that's the part to get in, is that whole piece of Advent that is, that we're not just anticipating the birth of Christ, but then the second coming.
Yes.
Is woven in there, which throws all another.
Right. Yeah, that first Sunday we start,
yes,
almost at the end times.
At the end times.
People are just, you know.
And it is so hard to explain every year.
Right.
Why we're doing that at the same time. So that's, the anticipation is something else.
Yeah.
The second coming.
Right.
The O antiphons have always meant a lot to me, and it's a longing. There's a lot of longing in there.
Yes. You know, that's longing. You talk about what is God's will for my life. Another translation of the word will is, how does God yearn for me, long for me? That just opens it up. So how do I yearn and long for God? How does God yearn and long for me? But that's, yes, it's a beautiful word. Yeah. Anything else about Advent? What are some things you've done in your church to set aside Advent and to make it its season that stands by itself, if you have?
We always have. We change liturgies by the season, and we always have a particular Advent liturgy. Often, interestingly enough, we use the Marty Haugen Vespers as a morning service.
Yes. Uh-huh. So a new setting you use. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's
sometimes good. Isaiah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep.
W.H. Auden's poem for the time being.
Yeah.
It talks about deep it up first week, the evil in the arm drawing near, and
right.
Or and T.S. Eliot, wait without hope, because hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Those two things.
My biggest struggle that I have in Advent is that there's other things going on in the life of the congregation that we have one Sunday set aside for the Sunday school Christmas program.
Right.
And then one Sunday set aside for the choir cantata.
Yeah.
And so we actually only end up with two Sundays of Advent, which it's only four to start with, and it kills me then.
Yeah.
Because then I sit and try to pick and choose then what will be preached about in there and how to take 4 weeks to put into two.
Okay.
And so that's difficult. So the way I'm going to do it this year is I'm going to add Wednesday night services for the first time.
Do any of you do Advent midweek services?
Yeah, and at one of my churches we did too, so that's what I'm going to add in to try to make Advent be fuller and richer.
Yeah.
But it's so hard that Christmas creeps in that way.
Yes.
And
And people want that.
You know, they do because they hear the Christmas carols being sung. But yet, I think I do have a whole bunch too that are at least steeped enough in worship life that they say Advent comes and goes so fast, you know.
How many of you do an Advent devotional, like you would do a Lent? We've done the midweek and then an Advent devotional, and we're going to get to that. The tension is, how does Advent be itself? Because it gets so crowded out. Okay, so now we're going to do another thing here. I want us to think, what's happening culturally? What's happening in the world during Advent? What's happening?
Santa.
Santa's happening.
The malls and the whole, you know, and
malls.
Cocktail parties.
People are like going crazy busy, right?
And they're so stressed.
Church parties.
Stressed by trying to dress so much, yeah.
Performance.
Church parties. What else?
Yeah, what else? School performance programs.
And the school programs are holiday programs.
Yes.
That's, I was going to say, holiday, we have to use that
word. Yes, holiday program, so we don't even have the language, even if it's Christmas yet.
However, if you're in Texas, you're in football playoffs.
Christmas. Oh my goodness.
My son's a band director, his school was in playoffs until the 22nd. He was playing Christmas carols, the band was marching to Christmas carols.
I always feel that Christmas things are all out already, they're not even thinking about it.
Right,
and the consumer society has hijacked all of our Christmas songs.
Yes, right.
And it's 30 shopping days.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you don't have to wait for anything because Christmas is already here everywhere else but in church.
Right. And what are our people, church people, doing? They're rushing off to parties. They're stressed out to the max.
Well, that's what we're asking at midweek Advent. We used to, when I came to this church, we had two, more at noon and at 7. And we've canceled the 7 because that's the young families with kids, and they're like, we're not coming.
Yeah. My dad taught at Luther Seminary. He would say, often less is more. And, you know, this is something to think about in your congregation. What, you know, all this stuff, what do we expect of our people when we have all these activities, caroling and parties and blah, blah, blah? Maybe sometimes people need to stay home, and maybe we need to help nurture the primary church, which is the home, right?
Yeah.
And that's what devotionals, or that's what we can give aids that take it home and do the lighting of the Advent candle. You know, we really need to teach our people, stay home, you know, nurture that at home. The primary church is the home, and we let our people off the hook when we provide all that for them, or we need to help them imagine that church at home. But our people are doing all this stuff, right? And then what's happening emotionally, if you can imagine, with folks? Huh?
Exhaustion.
We have a psychologist with exhaustion, anxiety.
When there's that thing of the perfect Christmas.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Absolutely. So think the expectations are really high, and you know it's going to plummet because it's not going to be met. The family's going to have a fight. It's not going to go as it was planned.
You know, a lot of churches are also doing, and I've never done it, but they do something around the holiday time to talk about the holiday blues.
Yeah. Christmas.
Christmas stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Because, and I see that done a lot of times. Isn't it Advent time to kind of prepare them to that?
Do you do that in your Sunday's adult forum?
No, it's a service that's offered to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically uses all the minor key Christmas carols. Mm-hmm. Like I Wonder as I Wander,
yes.
And, you know, things like that.
Yeah. So in Seattle, some of them do it on the 21st, the darkest day of the year, which is kind of nice.
You know, after Katrina, I heard Wynton Marsalis being interviewed on NPR, and he talked about the music and the blues. He said, we're people of the blues, because we know what suffering is, but he said, we're also people of hope. You know, the blue, and then I use that in a sermon, you know, people of the blues, it's blue, but this idea, I thought, what about having a blues service? That kind of music that speaks so deeply to hope in the midst of, you know, all this stuff, whatever is happening. You know, what else is happening in the world? I mean, soldiers are gone from people's homes.
People experience loss deeply.
And they'll notice that empty chair at the Christmas dinner. You know, the grief that maybe isn't spoken, right? So there's a lot going on. It's darker in Minnesota. People are
starting the depression.
Absolutely, absolutely. People are eating more sugar. I mean, all that stuff, right? So, and worship is really countercultural. Worship is so radical. We offer something other. We say, but we don't have to do it this way. There's another way that brings health and wholeness. There's another word. There's another, you know, the gospel presents something different. But it's a lot of stuff. And then we have the Christmas creed so that we only get two Sundays in Advent. And we miss those wonderful texts of the Magnificat. And we have John the Baptist and repentance. It's some tough, struggling stuff. But Advent gets lost, right? Would you say? Advent gets lost. We had friends who interviewed for a job in a call in North Dakota, and the only question they wanted to ask is, will you let us sing Christmas hymns in Advent? Because Pastor Moore would not allow them to sing Christmas hymns in Advent. So what do we do with that? So there's creative things to do, maybe. Maybe you take a Christmas tune and you use it as a hymn of praise, or you change the text, you find an Advent text with a Christmas tune. You know, you do goofy things like that, which matter. Or there's the Lord's Prayer could be sung in a, you know, Christmas tune. But it is a major struggle.
Well, and part of that, I have found people don't, you know, we sing Advent songs once or twice in a year. They're so unfamiliar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And just to, you know, change it, you know, take the words and change the melody to a familiar melody, right, swings them over, or find the tradition for lighting the Advent wreath. Since I've come to this church, we do light one candle.
Yeah.
And we add a verse every week. And right, last year I was going, we're not going to do that. I said, oh, yeah, it's our tradition now. We want to sing that song. Thank you. Yeah.
What about having an Advent hymn sing? Or having a hymn sing a half hour or an hour before worship, and you just, you know, kind of get it out there and have some fun around the piano or something. But you're right, people don't know the repertoire.
Yeah. And it is, that's, so it's almost bumpy, and they just say, please just give us the Christmas.
Yeah, just give us.
We're familiar.
So how do we plan worship? And, you know, Advent is waiting, expectations, we're on alert, we're on our tippy toes, we're anticipating, you know, we're like the kid looking over the window, you know, waiting for something to come in a world and a culture that does not want to wait and hasn't waited and doesn't need to wait because what we want, we get right now. So what kind of worship do we offer in that culture? Yeah.
First thought that came to mind is why not create liturgy within your own faith community that actually said exactly the same kinds of things. Our culture desperately needs to slow down and give voice to those things that inside we know we need it, but we don't feel like we can give ourselves permission to do it, and we don't feel like the church really explicitly gives us permission, even if when we try to do it. I think we just have to create an intentional space and say all of those things very deliberately, and create space where people can learn and sit together and practice it.
Do you know what happened? A few of my friends were doing something last Advent, and that just sort of reminded me of it, and it was that exact message. It's a movement that's out there And it's to let Christmas not be about the buying and the all these expectations, and then they put it into an Advent liturgy and had it be the rhythm and the pattern and the message of Advent, and it was some kind of a movement.
Alternative?
No, it was based on some guy wrote a book, and then somebody had put it into some liturgical, and I can't even remember, but there were several of my clergy friends that were doing, and it was called, and it was like almost a commitment you made then to, it was encouraging them to change our whole attitude that we don't have to have, Christmas is not about all of these stressful things, but instead, and then they put it into an Advent liturgy, and it's just coming to mind as you said this, but it was a kind of a more radical, and then they put it into a whole liturgical framework.
Just to add real quick too, I think like Holden's Prayer on the Cross, Vespers, is a really good model for how to do that, because it's, at its core, it's simple, it's not cluttered.
Right.
And there's that space in the beginning where there's a couple different voices that are kind of narrating, leading the people in, and drawing in people in deeper before you get to the heart of the practice and the movement of the body coming to our cross room, whatever it is. Like, there's ways to keep it simple and still have that.
Well, and I just bought that book today that he talked about. I'd never seen that was there. And there's so much in it, seasonal even then.
Yeah.
There's an Advent.
Is there? I haven't seen the new one yet.
And so I was excited that it was so, it had so many different contexts to put that in.
Yeah. So what are the ways in worship we could imagine slowing people down and bringing the sense of wonder and longing, wonder, which is such a, you know, have we lost, do we have eyes of wonder still? Eyes of, how can we bring that sense of wonder and longing and mystery? We talked about the mysterious, and slowing down. What are some things that we could do within the worship that would actually promote that? What do you think? We can be outrageous.
Some sort of art piece that grows by the week that gets added to the sort.
Have you seen Arirudos?
Yeah.
The fish? It started in Advent.
Yeah.
It's just blue, and it has grown in many, many phases.
We have in our congregation four sections of the altar cover, the altar cloth. It's blue with some design, and the first Sunday, and the second, and so by the fourth Sunday, it covers the altar. Sort of an implementation across the season. I imagine that's the same, based on something that you're saying here.
That's what
Siri
was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe in creating, dim lights.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
And maybe over the course of the 4 weeks of Advent, the lights become increasingly brighter.
Thinking about, like, what do you call those, singing bowls or whatever, and introduce or close readings, maybe, or other times where you want to create a moment of silence or a minute of silence.
Yeah, begin a silence with a simple bell, you know, which you're sort of on tippy toes, you know. And yeah, so the introduction of silence. Advent, if your congregation doesn't do much of silence, you know, and silence, 15 seconds is a lot for people.
Yeah.
You do a minute and they're worried.
Yeah.
They're like, the pastor lost their place, and they'll know. But you can actually, we can actually change habits over time. So you start with, you know, you just gradually grow it, and with repetition, it can actually change. So maybe you start with silence, or you have no prelude. I mean, Advent should be a simple, harmonizations of everything should be really much simpler. So maybe it's more Te Deum, or it's just single line chants, where you do morning prayer or something that's not so fanciful. That sort of,
using some sort of guided meditation?
Yep. Yep. I keep thinking of your friends who made your question about would they let them sing Christmas gift. How do we create within a congregation of people an openness to this, to these plans? It's sort of a trite way of saying it is countercultural. We at that time are going in a different direction.
Right.
I'm not saying that to be discouraged, but I would love to think that there are ways that we can open people to this sort of way of looking at Advent and understanding it, but it'll be across the cultural.
I know, I do an Advent retreat, an Epiphany retreat, and a Lenten retreat. And it's a full weekend, and it's for women, and they come, and we take on all this stuff. So that's one thing. Another thing is you could have a worship planning brainstorming in early November, just like this, do exactly what I've done with your folks in your congregation, and you get people, so part of it is education, and you get them actually excited. So you look at the text, you know, you do the culture, you look at what's going on. And so part of it is, I think people, when they don't know, or they haven't been let in on what it's about, right?
Yes.
So you could have a wonderful worship planning, and invite anyone in the congregation wants to come, just like this. And you have fun, you share memories of the season, and you let people in, and they get invested. And then they talk to folks, and then it just increases the surface area, right, of interest. Yes.
And I don't mean this in any negative way, but by having the women of the congregation, I'm not being critical of men, but if you have a women's retreat.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
That I believe would be very powerful.
Yeah, it's very powerful. Yeah. You know, and maybe there's themes. In Advent, I could see a week on what are we waiting for, who waits with us, what are we waiting upon, you know. Just a whole idea of waiting. Waiting with joy, waiting with, I mean, there's just so much you can do with that, but I think we need to help people. I think it's like kind of biblical criticism. We don't talk about it, you know. We don't allow people to learn and grow and be adults. And, you know, we withhold stuff. But we all own this business, right? We all own it. Other things about Advent that you can imagine you could do differently. Is there anything around the sacraments, around communion, that could be done in a way that helps slow us down?
One of the resources in Seattle, we have what's called the Compass Housing Alliance, and it deals with homeless people. And every year they put out a little book called Silver and Gold Have I None. And it has short, like 1 minute, devotional statements made by some of the staff and a number of homeless people. And different people in our church use that as a, you know, they have enough for the full Advent season. And it's amazing, you know, to hear the voices of people that you don't usually hear in the worship service.
Yes.
That's for home.
Yes. Oh, that's wow. This is those of you who will be new pastors, this is a conundrum. This is a struggle in the church. And the first word I think that came out was struggle. But Advent is such a rich season that it just can't get long. We so desperately need Advent. Our human bodies and souls, we so desperately need to, you know, what does it mean to prepare, take time to prepare? Maybe it'd be good to have people share their stories, like what does it mean to prepare, getting ready for surgery, someone who's a surgeon. I mean, to have people tell their preparing stories or something. The other thing I've learned as a pastor, I've really moved away from using birthing language. I mean, I use pregnancy language, specifically about the pregnant woman giving birth. But I talk about birth in other kinds of ways, you know, being pregnant with hope or pregnant. There's a lot of women who can't give birth. And it's a tough one. That's also a tension point, too. You don't want to deny it, but yeah. It's a tension point. So we can talk about other ways of giving birth. You know, how do we make room for Jesus in our lives and our heart? You know, what do we need to give birth to in our lives? But not just to focus solely on the pregnant Mary. And that's just, I was actually confronted by some, this is just too painful. I can't give birth. And some people avoid church at Advent because it's so painful, that metaphor of pregnancy. Advent is also, it used to be, the color used to be purple. Do you remember that? Any of you remember purple? And so it was really seen as a penitential season.
Right.
And it still has that quality. And we're actually encouraged to have daily confession, have a confessional. I actually tried that once and no one came. But that's an interesting thing, to encourage people to come or at least have a place where they could. A personal kind of confessional. We don't always think about that too. But slowing down is also telling the story, taking care of business, right? Mm-hmm. But the blue added the hope and differentiated Lent from Advent. But Advent still has that penitential, repent, turn. Anything else about this wonderful, wonderful season of Advent? I know when we think about, we've also given tangible things in worship. Do you do that in your worship at all? We've given, like, we've had a rock that had the word hope on it, kind of put hope in your pocket or be like a rubbing rock or sometime a tangible thing to take home with them. Kind of talisman, really powerful. Yeah.
So I was going to say another idea of this idea of waiting or preparing or something is maybe an act of worship during an Advent service might be to actually prepare a package that for homes or like creating your own home devotional Advent kits so that you're doing something as a community, but you're being intentional about, like you were saying, about like a church as a primary home, and equipping the people to go and do create that space in their homes.
Yeah. Let's sing an Advent hymn. All this Advent, one that I just love is number 261. Is there anyone who doesn't know this? This is As the Dark Awaits the Dawn. You know, it's a Carl Schoch. It's just this beautiful. And it hits all the themes that we've talked about. It's really lovely. And so this is a hymn you could do one verse every Sunday, or you could have a soloist sing it, and slowly by 4 weeks they'd know this thing. They got this thing down. Go ahead, Siri.
Okay. Thank you.
they're new, and some new language, but aren't there some beautiful, you know, in fact, this could be spoken. You could read this together.
Yeah.
Antiphonally, you could do all kinds of ways to introduce this to get them used to it. The 262, do you know this, Tizay responds,
yeah.
Wait for the Lord. This would be a wonderful prayer response, you know, mixed with silence and then seeing this, which just emphasizes that wait. By the time the fourth week, they're like, okay, we waited long enough, we're ready, you know, we're ready. Then one more hymn is 247, and you talked about singing that. This is Come Now, O Prince of Peace. You talked about the other one. Do you know this one, Come Now, O Prince of Peace?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which one is that? What's that? 247. This is a great one to use as lighting a candle, you know. It's got four verses.
We have a liturgy that uses this as the introduction to the Eucharist.
Oh, wonderful.
Which it make us one body.
Yes. Let's sing this.
Peace. Children.
Children. What do you come expecting? When you come to Christmas worship, what's non-negotiable? If it wasn't there, you'd say, oh,
joy to the world.
Joy to the world, silent,
silent night.
Candlelight.
Silent night, candlelight.
Candlelight.
Yeah. Like, I didn't get my money's worth.
Okay. Strings.
Strings. Okay. Joy to the world. Joy to the world now is an Advent hymn. Mm-hmm. You notice that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And the Red Hymnal was an Advent hymn, and the LBW was a Christmas hymn, now it's an Advent hymn.
What is that? Do you know why? How
no.
That got moved by
I
that?
Don't.
Okay. I noticed that too, and I wondered what the gift
yeah.
was.
So use it in Advent, and tell people,
that's like,
look,
that's
it's Advent. Advent.
Something just
comes up. But yeah. Are prepared in the room.
They just switch it back.
Switch yes. it back.
I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. What else? What? So the church so, is full?
Telling the story.
Telling the story.
Yeah, yes. Visitors.
Visitors. Okay, lots of visitors, family.
Kids in new dresses.
Kids in new dresses, new dresses.
For me, non-negotiable communion.
Communion. Do you all have communion?
Oh, yeah.
At Christmas? That's not so always so common, communion. God became fleshed. Mm-hmm. It's time to do it, isn't it?
Plus, sometimes it's the only time people are visiting.
Yes,
that's right. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the pews are full, there's high energy, right? High energy. What's happening culturally and emotionally?
Exhaustion.
You look around for the black boy back there.
I see weariness, even though it's...
Yeah.
A sigh of relief.
Yeah,
relief. It's almost done.
Almost done.
The other thing I notice a lot, and it happens whenever we sit down, I usually work with my worship committee and do planning and stuff, and we always talk about what day of the week it falls, because we don't have Christmas Day worship. We gave up on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we have Christmas Eve, and so it depends on... They'll say, well, since it falls on this day of the week, they'll probably have to work until about this certain time. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then it's women saying, well, somehow I have to juggle a meal in here. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so it really is, I mean, it's a different kind of stress. The women, and it's my worship committee is 90% women.
Right. Right.
And so they're saying, somehow I have to fit all these things in. And they do want to fit worship in. You know, but it's a matter of how to fit, get in out of work, and then... getting a meal in somehow.
And another tension with Christmas, a different one than Advent, but Christmas can be three Sundays, right? We have two Sundays of Christmas. And people, when that Christmas Eve is over, it's like Christmas is done. They're like ready to wrap it up. They're sick of the Christmas hymns. Because they've heard
them in
Walmart.
When they come.
They are so sick of them.
Yes.
But we have two more, and sometimes we have Rachel weeping over children. We have like awful stuff we have to look at. But we have two more. So how do we keep Christmas going when they're shut down?
They're packing up. Yeah.
They're packing up.
The tree's out the door before.
The tree's out the door. I mean, mm-hmm. so how do we keep this joy and this story, telling this story, going when people are like, okay, I'm just ready to get back to normal. Mm-hmm. Just forget this noise. I'm just let's do basics. And then Sunday after Christmas, they're not gone, and usually the college kid comes home and they preach for the pastor's time, right? So it's interesting dynamics that are taking place. So it's a challenge for the worship planner. How do we keep Christmas kind of vibrant? And
focusing on New Year.
They are, right, exactly. The papers, everything, yeah, mm-hmm. right.
And that's a new semester of school.
Right. So how do we keep Christmas going? Any ideas? How do you keep that, you know, God creeps in close, the Word become flesh, God with skin on, you know, mm-hmm. in the incarnation. How do we keep that going? People are just like, you know, they're just kind of done with church, maybe.
I guess I do like, though, you know, Christmas Eve, we say all the ones that you have to, the have-tos.
Yes.
And then I do like the few Sundays afterwards, I like getting out the low how era roses
yes.
will lead. And those, and it is kind of fun then to show them there's more than just joy.
Right.
And try to find some that work. done in the mall to death. You know,
yeah.
There's a few you can find.
Yeah, there are those rare ones that I think it is kind of nice to.
We have always a Sunday after Christmas, we have a hymn sing, and people just, they're just making requests, and we take 25, 30 minutes with it, and people love it. And so everyone gets a chance to sing their hymn that maybe wasn't sung, and it's, we just say, let's pretend we're sitting around the living room in the piano, and we're singing.
I did that one year, and they said they were so glad I did that, because half of them were at North Dakota Grammys.
That's right. Yeah.
And then they said, and they didn't sing my favorite, so I do
that's
like
right.
the idea of doing that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and during the Christmas season, I make sure that all those Sundays we sing nothing but Christmas carols. Every Christmas carol is sung.
Yes.
And
yeah,
we'll repeat a few of the old favorites, but I write a spoken liturgy to go with it that keeps that keeps bringing it up. Here's where we are. This is what it's about to keep in that season.
Right. And then to educate people about why. You know, to really teach them about the church year. You know, we should probably have banners or diagrams about the church year so people can really kind of track it, why we do it, how we do it. You know?
I've done a service on the church year.
We have.
Yeah. We're taking them through the whole, instead of Christ the King.
Yes.
Go through the whole church year in one setting.
Yep, that's.
And get to sing the hymn from each
season. Ah, so they see how
and
the story.
And you explain
goes.
It. Why we do it.
Yep.
And I
think we always had an altar hymn sing. The altar girl would give that sing. Everybody would come and they have some solos. But then you pick out the hymn that you like and everybody would sing it.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Part of what I do with the intro to worship is, yes, your Christmas trees are down, ours is not.
Yes.
And the manger is still here. Magi are still coming, and we're still, you know, and that's sort of that education all the time that culture says, society says, it's over, pack it up, put it away.
That's
no,
right.
In the church, here we are.
That's right.
And we're not
that
really
is
much.
What is fun. Is, and I pull it out almost every year, even if the liturgy doesn't, is the We Three Kings.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that is a nice way to remind them then that that still has not yet happened.
How'd that not get into the rainbow?
Yes.
It's just ridiculous.
We've had people bring their crush scenes from their home, and we've had them, and, you know, you can move the animals.
That's
around.
What I did. And,
yeah.
You know, I did that. I started with the wise men. We have windows along our sanctuary, and I started with the wise men in the back window, and the next week I moved it up and to get them closer, and that was fun. And I pointed that out to my children, so they're coming.
We had a moving crush scene here, so the Three Kings were sleds up at Shelley 9, and so they got here last. Mm-hmm. And everyone had a responsibility for part of the crush scene and would move it every day and it would get buried by the snow, so we'd have to dig it out. Yeah. It was really neat to see
that's
the progression.
One of the interesting things I found on one of my congregations on internship, and I've never been able to accomplish it, they actually did the Sunday School Christmas program December the 28th.
Yeah.
We did that at my church the last 2 years. It worked out beautifully.
Yes. Did it really work out?
Yes.
Oh, it's wonderful because you got it out of the Advent, you got it into Christmas, and it was the tradition.
Yes.
Now,
that's
one congregation, actually this Christmas Eve 7 o'clock service was the kids' Sunday school.
That's right, yeah.
That's what a church near mine does that. Mm-hmm. And I like that idea of the 20, you've done that, and people did balk.
I don't know if it was after Christmas.
We've had a wonderful member
of our congregation writes original Christmas plays.
Yeah.
For the children, and one year it was It's Still News or something.
Yes.
Oh,
that's great.
That's good.
That's great. And you know, to say, we're going to try it for this year. We're going to pilot it so you're not like changing all the world.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, it wasn't scheduled that way, but we had a blizzard or something, so it ended up being after Christmas. But we sort of liked it.
Then you had a tradition.
Right.
I want to read a Eucharistic prayer for Christmas Eve, which uses new language, and then we're going to close with one hymn. There's a couple Christmas hymns here that are just absolutely incredible. But listen to this and see if this is new.
Sorry.
Do you need the accompaniment book?
Accompaniment book. Sorry, I didn't. No.
Okay.
Thank you, though.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, eternal wisdom, this is the Eucharistic prayer for communion. Oh, eternal wisdom, we praise you and give you thanks because you emptied yourself of power and became foolishness for our sake. For on this night you were delivered as one of us, a baby, needy and naked, wrapped in a woman's blood, born into poverty and exile to proclaim good news to the poor and to let the broken victims go free. Therefore, the woman who gave you birth, the women who befriended you and fed you, who argued with you and touched you, the woman who anointed you for death, the woman who met you risen from the dead, and with all your lovers through the ages, we praise you, saying, and in the end, come now, dear Spirit of God, embrace us with your comfortable power, brood over these bodily things, and make us one body in Christ. As Mary's body was broken for him and her blood shed, so may we show forth his brokenness for the life of the world, and may creation be made whole through the new birth in his blood. Mm.